Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 6 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Tyler Howitt of the Couch Potato Philosophy Podcast. Welcome to the show, Tyler.
Thanks. It is great to be here talking about one of my favorite movies of all time.
Mine too. I hope so. Man, you've been with it for a while. Yeah, I always love talking to people who love this movie also, or whatever movie I'm talking about. It's always fun when you're talking with fans. You know, it's not something that you have to start looking for what to talk about. Things will just flow. Things just go. It goes great. So I'm looking forward to this week having a great discussion with you. Last week, we had a great discussion with our guest, Jay. And, you know, next week and all the weeks of this, I hope to have many great discussions about the movie. Hopefully, most of my guests are fans of the movie. At least they told me they are. Whether they really are or not, we'll have to wait and see.
You should get one person who just hates it and just to see what they do. I don't know who that would be.
I'd have to try and find out. No, the problem is the people who hate it declined to be on it. You know, I did have a few people that I invited and they said, nope, sorry, I'm not a fan of the movie. I don't want to be on it. But I do have one guest that's coming up in a few weeks that has never seen the movie on principle.
That's cool.
On principle.
On principle.
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
And he told me that he's willing to be a guest, but I have to be forewarned he's not going to watch the rest of the movie. He's only going to watch his 5 minutes, and it'll be a very interesting week talking to him about it, and we'll have to see how that goes. Hopefully I'll be able to convince him that it's worth his while to see the rest of it. You know, I can't imagine a movie that I wouldn't want to see because of hype or anything like that.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, just to be contrary. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, again, I see thousands of movies. So for me, you know, it doesn't really make a difference.
That's true.
I watch so much, so it doesn't really matter. But whatever.
Yeah.
So Minute 6 begins with Paulina responding and ends with John starting to ask a question. So on Friday, we ended off with Holly talking to her live-in maid, Paulina. Trying to find out what's going on, make sure that everything's set up in the house and stuff like that. You know, did Mr. McLean call, you know, and stuff like that. And so the way that the episode ended last week was basically she said, well, maybe you should make up the guest room just in case. So we start off today with her responding, I do that already. So, I mean, it's great, you know, that, I mean, we don't have very much background on who Paulina is. You know, no. We don't know if she's just been with Holly for the last 6 months since she moved to LA,
right.
Or was she in New York with them? No, we have no way of knowing. It doesn't really matter.
But you immediately get the sense that she cares about the family, that she loves the family, or she really has a good working relationship with her, and that even there's a joking relationship between Holly and her. And so I like her. It's one of those very small moments where you sort of latch on. I wouldn't say you latch onto a character because we only see her, I think, one more time. But we do like her from the very beginning.
Yeah, no question about that. I mean, I part of the whole thing is I discussed this a little bit last week. I love the fact that she keeps calling her Mrs. Holly.
Yes.
Meaning she's respecting the fact that this is a married woman. You know, we'll find out, you know, later this week and get more into it next week. But the idea that you know, she's working in a Japanese company and she downplays the idea that she's married. But here in her own house with her live-in maid, she makes or
– very important.
You know, she makes it clear that I'm a married woman, Mrs. Holly.
Yes.
And I mean, I found it interesting last week that she said, you know, did Mr. McLean call? You know, not did my husband call? Did John call? I mean, there's so many different options of what it could have been. And she basically said, did Mr. McLean call? You know, that type of thing. And then she gives a great response to Holly's response is, what would I do without you, Paulina?
And hangs up.
I love that response. Now, I have a personal story about this. I remember in maybe it was 11th or 12th grade, I had a crush on a girl named Paulina. And, you know, we would always hang out and stuff like that. And I would always say to her, what would I do without you, Paulina? You know, it worked out really well. It was, you know, nothing ever came of it. Doesn't make a difference. I still remember a picture I have of her where she was giving me a big thumbs up with I don't remember where it was or whatever, but I this is 30 something years ago, so I don't even know where she is. Not that I'm going to look for her because I can't even remember her last name, but I just remember the connection to Die Hard. What would I do without Chipotle now? And apparently, I did well without her.
Yeah. You're okay.
Yeah.
Well, I like also, and this is going to resonate, I think, in, you know, I don't want to jump the gun too much, but in the conversation that's going to come up with between John and Argyle, as you know, which I think puts us in the next episode, but they're sitting and talking, and John's being a bit cagey about the marriage, and then of course, you know, later on when he finds out that she's using her that Holly is using her maiden name, I love that he, you know, is that miscommunication between you know, partners who are living on other sides of the country and who are kind of struggling a little bit in their marriage, that she does still consider herself married. He's being cagey about it a little bit with Argyle, but we get the sense right off the bat that she is Mrs. Holly. And I think that's really, it's cool. It gives a little bit of what would that be, dramatic irony for us to see. No. This is a conflict between them, but we do know where Holly does stand, which right. I think is great.
Right. But again, she wants him to stay in the guest room.
Yes, she does.
So that's something true. Too.
There is a tension. Yeah.
That says something too. I haven't seen him in 6 months. He didn't call before he got on the plane. You know, again, yeah. It's pre-cell phones. So we got to give him a little bit of credit back then. You know, it's hard for us to grasp the idea that someone actually can't make a phone call. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you and I are both married. If we wouldn't call, we would be in really deep trouble. Because yes, there's no excuse.
Before getting on a cross-country flight, yeah.
Yep. Exactly. There's no excuse. But back 34 years ago, apparently there was.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And that does speak to the tension that's going on there. There is tension between the two of them. I don't think – it's not that they hate each other. It's not that they are divorced. It's that they're struggling. And it's even in that – in the late 80s, we've got this – you know, she's a businesswoman. She's not – a housewife or anything like that. And he is clearly having a little bit of a struggle with that, which, you know, kind of comes into, it certainly is a major, it comes into play as a plot point. So.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And then she, as you said, she hangs up the phone. She doesn't even say goodbye or anything like that. Just hangs up the phone, you know, and apparently that means she feels comfortable enough, Paulina, that she can just hang up the phone and not get offended, you know, not be worried that she's offending her by hanging up the phone.
No, I it's one of those things that I always think is funny in movies or in TV shows where you hang up the phone when in generally in regular in real life we wouldn't do that.
Right.
But it is funny, and it's funny, and it also shows that relationship between them, because it's not just like, you know later Paulina and she hangs up the phone. It's what would I do without you, Paulina? Hang up the phone, and it's good. Yeah.
It's one of the things. I mean, I have a pet peeve with movies and TV shows where something will happen, and then the following day someone will talk about it and they'll say, you know, the other night. Why didn't you say last night? You know, it's like last night, not the other night. Do you remember the other night you did this? And it's last night, but whatever.
Yeah. Right. Or when so you start a conversation in a movie where you completely recap something that happened the day before that both of the people know about, but it's because the audience might not be paying attention. Yeah.
Well, we're getting that here also. We'll get a lot of that this week. There's a lot of exposition for us, not for anybody else.
And I like it. Yeah.
It's done very well. There's no question about that. So at this point, we get the shot of Holly back in her office. She looks at the pictures. Last week, we discussed in detail which pictures there are and some of the things we can learn from the various pictures that there are. There is only one picture of her with John. It's the family picture. And she looks at the family picture and then just like puts it face down on the on the counter. Now, again, we know why she's doing this, because, you know, this is, you know, Chekhov's family photo. You can say that.
Yes,
you know?
Of course it is.
But you don't know that when you're first watching the movie. But it's not as if she's upset at him at this point. You know, we don't see anger or anything like that.
No.
You think that that would be the reason why she would be putting the picture down, that she's angry at him. She's pissed at him for something. But she's not.
Yeah.
You know,
she doesn't say, screw just, you, John,
it's for the
slam
script.
It down.
Exactly. Yes. It's just for the script.
It is. 100%.
And it's great. It's great the way that they do that. You know. But you know, it's maybe she's looking at it from the perspective that John was just inconsiderate, that he didn't try and call.
Right.
You know, like, how difficult, she might say, how difficult could it be to get on a payphone and even leave a message?
Right. Or I think he's flying first class. And I guess I don't.
No, I don't think so. I don't think he's not first class. No, I don't think so. Again, we don't know for sure. Actually, there are only two seats.
That's the only thing that made me think of it, too.
I don't think his pride would let him, you know, take a ticket from her.
That's fair. He would have said, no, I'm buying my own ticket. I'm paying my own way. Because he also is even, you know, he's low-key planning on staying with his captain, you know.
Right. Pomona.
In what did he say, Ramona? Yeah.
He's a Ramona, right? And then she corrects him, yeah. Pomona, right?
Pomona, yeah. So I agree. Actually, that's a good point. I was going back and forth. We had decided, my wife and I watched the minutes together, and we had decided it was first class. And so I actually thought, oh, maybe he actually has a phone in the front, but I don't know when that happened
I'm not sure if they had. Well, this is what we know, that in Die Hard 2, they already have phones. They have their phones. Right. That we know.
Right.
So it that's only 2 years later. So yeah. It's possible that they had phones there. In Die Hard 2, I don't think it was just for people who were in first class. I don't know. We know Holly's in first class. That's for sure. Because, you know, Nakatomi's paying for it. But, but yeah, no, that's a good point. I didn't think about the fact because there are only two seats, and it is a cross-country flight. So you think that there would be more
behind him.
Maybe he's in business class.
Maybe business. Even more than a reason that he might have, if it's business class, that he might have a phone.
Right. It's true. So yeah, another X against John for not calling.
Come on, Johnny. Yeah.
Yeah. Could have just called. I mean, they do establish in the next movie.
There's a phone in the limo. Right. So he could have called. Ah, right. Come on, man.
That's right. But I mean, we establish only in the next movie that he doesn't like technology. You know, we don't know that at this point. So the question is whether that was part of the idea or not. I don't know.
You know. They had it all planned out. They had it all. They knew it all, you know.
Apparently.
Yeah.
And then we get a shot of John walking through the baggage claim.
Yep.
You know, still, you know, carrying his, he's got his suit bag.
Have you got the teddy bear by that point?
Yes. Yes. Okay. So he has the teddy bear the whole time. No, yeah.
Oh, that's right. He's got it the whole time. Yeah. He didn't grab it off baggage. Yep.
Yeah. So he's got like his little sports bag, and you know, he's got his suit bag and the teddy bear. That's what he's carrying. And then we see this beautiful blonde woman walk towards him and then past him, and he like follows her with his eyes and then watches her jump up I wouldn't even say greet, because she basically jumps up and is caught by – she straddles the guy standing up completely. Yep. Another passenger who's, you know, just got off the plane also. And she squeals, and he looks and smiles and goes, California.
California. Well, I thought – so what I – the way I interpreted part of the meaning behind California was her dress too, or like what she's wearing, because she's wearing, you know – leggings and kind of a crop top, and I thought, wow, if that's the thing that bothers John McClane, he should fly in 2020 or 2022, whatever 2022. We are now. I forget.
You missed 2 years. There you go.
Because I was like, wow, if that's the thing that bugs him, yeah, what is it now? But I thought it was funny, and also that she, because I think he thinks she's looking at him at first,
right?
Because this would be the second woman he's encountered, and the first one, you know, gave him the long up and down when he saw her, the flight attendant on the flight.
Right. Well, we discussed this last week. There is there's a cut scene with the flight attendant where she comes on to him.
Oh, I don't think I knew that. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, wow. It's both in the script, and it's also in they actually filmed it.
They filmed it.
Where she basically comments about the bear.
Yeah.
And she says, you know, you should have gotten her a seat. And he looks at her and goes, her? And then he looks at the bear, like the crotch area of the bear, to see if it's a woman or not. And he goes, no, I don't think she'd like it. And then the stewardess says, well, I wouldn't mind.
Wow.
You know, yeah. Yeah. Okay. You can find that. Wow. You can find that on YouTube.
I will.
They do have that. They have like, I found, I think it's like a 20-minute reel of a whole bunch of cutscenes from the movie, and it's on there. You know, I'm glad they cut it because it's not needed. It would sort of make him feel a little more lecherous, and we don't want to feel that. You know, we want to feel at least in this movie, we want to feel that he still loves Holly, and that he's doing everything for Holly.
Situation, yeah,
yeah. 100%. Which again goes with the whole thing with this California girl. Also, he's looking, but he's not. He knows he's married.
Yeah.
He's not concerned about that. And what I found really funny is that as he's walking, right after the woman jumps, there's this guy walking behind him that looks like he's, talking to the person next to him, saying, "Oh, look, maybe it's Bruce Willis," or something like that. It just looks really funny. If you look at the 30 second mark, there's a guy right behind him wearing a suit, a relatively young guy who's walking with a woman, and he's like looking at Bruce Willis but talking to her. I love seeing that in the movies. But they didn't catch making that mistake. So that's just great. And then we see, one of the workers in the airport come across with all of these baggage carts coming by. Whenever I see this in the scene in this movie, it gives me a reminder that this is like a hint that to what they're going to do in Die Hard 2, because they have that there also.
Oh yeah, true.
They have the part where someone is walking across with all of these, with all these baggage carts at the same time. So maybe it's a little bit of foreshadowing, wishful thinking foreshadowing.
Die Hard 2, they for sure decided to try and keep a structure to the movies. They would lose that eventually, especially with Die Hard with a Vengeance. But and Die Hard 5, of which we will not speak.
Well, eventually I hope to, but that's going to be a fun one to do.
Are you planning on going all the way through?
My plan is to eventually do all five, but I'm not a fan of the fifth one either, so that's going to be a very interesting one to do.
Hey, bring me on, because I hate that one too, and I would love to be a discusser of that.
Well, we got a lot more to do before that, Tyler. Don't worry.
A few years.
We'll see how this week goes, and then we'll see if I bring you back.
Right. Yeah.
Then he sees a young man holding a sign that says J. McClane. And we see the Nakatomi insignia on the placard that he's holding. And they do a great job of zooming in on it a little bit. So we get see what's actually written there. And then he passes by, he misses it first, and then he looks back and sees it and then turns around. And it makes me wonder, what was his original plan?
I thought the same thing. Did he know there was a car and he just isn't used to looking for a thing like that? I don't think so. I don't think so.
He was
getting a taxi. Yeah, 100%.
But again, he was getting a taxi. Where was he going? Part of the whole thing is that, this is on December 24th, 1988.
Yeah.
This was a Saturday. Okay. So he just flew in on a Saturday, Christmas Eve. And how does he know that Holly's at the office? There's all these different things that you can wonder about, because it's not really mentioned here.
No.
Because Argyle, we'll get to this a little bit, but Argyle will take him to the Nakatomi building. But, did he know that that's where he was supposed to go? Was he supposed to go to the house first?
Yeah.
What was his original plan?
Right. Well, even when he gets to the plaza, he types in the thing and finds out. This is another plot hole, which I think we get to, but the security guard tells him to go all the way up to the top where it's the only people left in the building and there's the party. That didn't need to happen anyway, but also, just this idea of, was John going there the whole time? Did he know he was meeting her for a party? Was he going to meet her at the office, go to her house? Yeah, I don't know. I kind of just assumed he was going to take a taxi and go to the house, but then Argyle kind of stepped in.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, there's no way of knowing.
No,
we'll never know. We'll get a little bit later. We'll talk about it in the script, but it's not mentioned at all. It's one of the big questions. I mean, one of the great things about doing movies, doing a podcast about a movie by minute, is that you do mention all, you find all these little nitpicks that really don't make a difference in the movie. They really don't,
No.
but they're just fun to find, you know?
Yeah, they're interesting to kind of just poke the hole in. Is it a hole, or is it something that we, you know, that is like we like the picture frame? Is it just there? Is it there for the script and structurally we need it, even though it doesn't really make all that much sense? I gotta also say, if I'm not jumping the gun too much, but this is within our minute here, I wanted this minute, and I didn't even, or this section of 5 minutes here, I didn't even realize it until we got to it. I said, I want to talk about Argyle. Argyle is, Devereaux White is just my favorite. So
All right, hold
we'll
off
get
just a
into
little
Argyle
bit.
here.
Hold off a little bit,
Oh,
and
okay.
we'll get to him. We'll get to
No
him.
worries.
He's
So excited. So excited.
there. So he sees this placard, and he like walks by, and then turns around and sees it, and then this high class woman like walks by him and like bumps into him, and says, "Excuse me." And it's like I was looking at it, and I'm
What?
like, "Who's at fault here?" She's saying, "Excuse me" to him. But you know he's the one who's standing and you know in her way, you know, and then he
Oh
like
yeah.
quickly maneuvers away and lets her go, and then we get to meet new character who we'll talk about.
Yes.
So John goes, "Hey, I'm John McClane," and he goes, "Argyle, I'm your limo driver." So Argyle, as you mentioned earlier, is played by Devereaux White. Okay, now I knew him when I saw this movie. Did you know who he was? Okay, well, you know what? Let me ask that. When was the first time you saw Die Hard? Do you remember?
I can't remember. It's been that far back. I was probably, I would bet you my parents finally let me see it when I was 10, and it was probably my dad, and my mom wasn't happy about it. But I've watched it every year since then. So we're at, I don't know, 30, 25 years, something like that, of watching through Die Hard. So long ago, I can't remember the first time.
Right. So I noticed Devereaux White here, but I always
Okay.
knew him from Head of the Class. Okay.
Oh, okay, which I know of but haven't seen.
Right. Okay. So I mean I'm a little bit older than you, but the Head of the Class, he was a character on 47 episodes. You know, he played
Oh, he
a
was.
character named Aristotle McKenzie. Okay, but
Yeah.
you see now that I'm looking on IMDb, I see that he actually only started that in 89. So it means that I would have seen him as Argyle beforehand. Yeah.
Gotcha. So actually this kind of pushed
This
him into
came
the
right beforehand. Right.
Gotcha.
Right. I mean,
And he was in Blues Brothers.
he doesn't have that many credits. He has
No, he really doesn't.
nine movie credits, and most of them are very small roles. This is probably one of his biggest roles. He's got a small role
Yeah.
in Blues Brothers, small role in Max Dugan Returns, small role in Places in the Heart, small role in Action Jackson, and a pivotal role in Die Hard.
Yeah, for sure. And you would think that that would really push him. I guess it did in TV, but really he's got, what is it, five movie credits since then, only one of which I have heard of.
Yeah,
So
he's I don't know what he has been doing. He's not been acting, or not been acting in movies. Let's put it that way.
yeah.
You know, what exactly he's been doing, I don't know.
No, other than he in 2020 reprised his role as
Yes.
Argyle in a
Yeah.
commercial.
I saw that. I watched that commercial last week. I gotta say, I didn't really like it very much. You know, I thought
No.
it was far too cheesy, you know, and having Theo as the main bad guy, you know.
Yeah, it didn't work. Didn't work.
Yeah. And having Argyle, you know, you know, 60-year-old Argyle just doesn't work as well.
Yeah, that one, it doesn't work very well. No.
Right. And then Argyle looks at him and says, "Nice bear." And John's response is, "Okay, Argyle." And then that's actually where this minute ends. We don't really, we'll have to wait until tomorrow to find out what he's saying about that. You know. So, like, first of all, the first thing I thought of when I was, you know, rewatching this is, what is Argyle? Do you know what do you know? What do you know about
It's
the
that
word?
pattern. Yeah. It's a knit pattern, I think. I didn't think about looking it up. But it's a knit pattern. I've got Argyle socks. I don't know if it's also a specific material. Is it wool always, or does it matter?
No,
But
it's a
yeah,
pattern. Argyle is a pattern. It's usually made of diamonds or lozenges. I don't know what that is. It must be a type of diamond shape or something like that. It sometimes refers to the individual diamond in the design, but mostly refers to the overall pattern
The
of the design.
crisscrossing diamond
Yeah.
pattern. Yeah.
Right. And it usually gives the sense of looking three-dimensional and that there's movement and stuff like that. So the pattern originally derived from the Clan Campbell of Argyll in Western Scotland, and they
That
use
makes
that for
sense.
their kilts and plaids, and they originally then they finally had patterned socks that they would wear in the Scottish Highlands in the 17th century and stuff like that.
Right, which makes sense also that they might keep it as socks or hose because in the early 1700s they weren't allowed to wear their tartan any like their
Right.
actual kilt pattern. So, but maybe that's a sneaky way of being able to still keep their heritage,
Right. Could be.
but not traditionally. Interesting.
Right. It's been it became more popular after World War One in both England and in the US, and people have
Sure.
been because the Duke of Windsor would actually use it on his golf clothing.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Okay. And
Ah.
so in modern times, so there was a golfer in who won the US Open in 1991 and 1999 named Payne Stewart, who was known for always being with Argyle socks. And then there's a whole bunch of sports teams that use it. In the 2010 Winter Olympics, the Norwegian men's curling team had Argyle patterns, and you had the Garmin Slipstream cycling team, which were known as the Argyle Armada. And then in Major League Soccer in the US, the soccer team, the Sporting Kansas City, they had also an Argyle pattern on their stuff. So, it's something that has lasted over the years.
Was
So
gonna
the
say, is that something, do you think that is mainly or maybe meaningful in Argyle's name and that he's I don't know, he's a limo driver, he's supposed to kind of
I don't
fall
know.
back into the pattern of things, or I don't
I
know.
don't know. I never really gave too much thought into it until now, about why
Yeah.
he would be named Argyle. Because you don't think of that as a name, and especially if you think of it just from the Scottish perspective,
Yeah.
Dvorak White does not look Scottish.
No, not so much. No, not so much.
No.
Huh.
He wouldn't be mistaken for William Wallace, that's for sure.
No, not so much.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that he's a blast. Yeah.
Completely. And what's funny is he mentions the nice bear. That's it. You can feel that he's nervous, that
Oh
he's
yeah,
just trying to
immediately.
find something to talk about right here.
And that's why I love Argyle. He's got this nervous energy about him.
Right.
He's and we'll talk about this
Well,
more in the
we
next
can talk.
minute,
We'll talk
but
more about Argyle tomorrow. No
yeah.
question about that.
But
But
I love his introduction of immediately he's introduced as what is it? Argyle, I'm your
I'm your
limo
limo
driver.
driver.
And yet he does not look confident in it at all, and we'll hear the dialogue about that in a second, but or in the next minute. But he, the limo driver, is supposed to know what to do, you
Yes.
know, and
And
as we're gonna find out, he doesn't.
yeah, exactly. So, did you have anything else you want to say about this minute before I get into the script and the novel and all that stuff?
No, I don't believe so.
All
Nope, I
right.
think we're
So.
good.
So the script has a few little discrepancies here. Okay, she doesn't have the Holly doesn't have the line, "What would I do without you, Paulina?" She just it says she smiles. It says her smile comes through again. And one of the things that I love about reading scripts is the descriptive paragraphs that they have there, where they're trying to explain what's going on and stuff like that. So I have a few that I want to mention from here. So first of all, it says McLean, wearing his wool top coat and carrying the biggest stuffed animal F.A.O. Schwartz had in stock and his hang-up bag, comes down the American Airlines ramp and into the terminal. He avoids one near collision involving his stuffed animal, an act which drives him into another fender bender with a cute girl who looks like she's ready for high tide at Zuma. As she smiles, weaves onward, McLean looks at his own Arctic gear, and then the girl as she kisses a similarly garbed boyfriend. So the script mentions the fact that he's coming from cold weather and nobody in LA is used to this cold weather and
Yeah.
stuff like that. And then he has the line California, then it says he looks around the terminal, and then it says from McLean's perspective, family reunions are going on all around him as grandparents greet grown children and their children, young wives greet uniformed soldiers. Our Babbitt businessman greets a pleasant wife and two pleasant kids. So they mention in the, I love the fact that they mention in the script, the guy he's sitting next to on the plane, meets his family. When I was rewatching this minute, I watched it over and over to see if we see him at any point here, but we don't, which is
Oh,
pretty
that's too bad,
unfortunate.
actually.
Yeah, it would have been nice, if it was something in the background that you wouldn't have noticed. So it continues. It's all very traditional, very touching, and not the least bit corny. McClane watches, moved by the sight, then looks around the waiting area, just on the chance his family might be waiting. Instead, he spots a thin, gangling black kid, Argyle, in an ill-fitting chauffeur's uniform. As he waits, he beats out a rhythm on a Nakatomi Corporation card with J. McClane written on it in magic marker. McClane pauses in front of him, unsure. So it's fun
That's
that in the
pretty
script,
spot on.
yeah, I love how in the script it basically says that he's, tapping on the card. I don't remember seeing him do that in the movie. Do you
No.
remember seeing him do that? He's just holding the
I
card.
don't. Yeah.
Yeah,
I
here,
don't.
I
I
just
wish I.
I'm
I
just
would.
rewatching it.
Yeah, would
He's
you?
just holding the card. He's not tapping on it. I think it would have been more effective had he been tapping on it, because it would have
Yeah.
shown, his nervousness once again. And then the only other difference is instead of him saying nice bear, he says nice bag.
Okay. Bear, actually, I like bear better. I think bear
Yeah,
better
no, of
works
course,
better.
that works much better. So that's all we have from the script, but the novel describes Argyle completely different. Okay?
Okay.
And it doesn't even mention his name. He's not named in the original novel by Roderick Thorpe.
Oh, at all.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's not named. It says Mr. Leland. Oh, the character's name is Joe Leland in the original
Oh,
book,
didn't
not
know
John
that.
McClane. He was a black man, elderly with gray mustache. He was in livery, including billed cap and black tie. I was sent to pick you up, sir. And then Leland says, "Today? Tonight? It wasn't necessary. You should be home with your family." "Oh, I'm getting paid, sir," the man said with a smile. "Miss Gennaro wants me to take you to her office." That was a change. "I have to pick up my luggage." "I'll take care of that, sir. Just let me have the tickets." Leland wondered why Steffi had bothered with this. Steffi is the it's in the novel, it's his daughter, not his wife.
Okay.
He's a
Oh,
retired.
okay. So the Ms. Gennaro is
Yeah,
not his
yeah. They
wife.
don't
Okay.
have that issue here. So it says Leland wondered why Steffi had bothered with this. There was no pleasure in it, especially when it led to a 70-year-old hefting his suitcases. "Come on," he said. "Maybe you'll be home early enough for Christmas Eve." "That's all right, sir." So again, I
Yeah.
like the fact that they, when they were creating the script, they decided to completely change the character and have him this, hip 20-year-old as opposed to, a 70-year-old. But what I found
Yeah.
very interesting is the big change here that, you have this professional limousine driver as opposed to Argyle, who's this young guy who is not a professional. It
Yeah.
completely changes the tone of things, and
It
also their
definitely
relationship.
lightens it up.
Oh,
Yeah.
because it leaves things open for them to have this little relationship that we're gonna get to over the next couple of days. So yeah, I like that. Well, we have a few more things in the novel later in the week, but we'll get there. So every Monday
Sure.
we do a segment called Die Hard on a Monday,
Yeah, I like it.
where I will have my guest rank their top five Die Hard genre movies. We discussed the fact that Die Hard has created this genre of one man against the world, sometimes against terrorists, sometimes not. It doesn't really matter.
Sure.
But so Tyler, why don't you give us your top five? Start with your number five and work your way up.
Okay, and I for this one I did not include Die Hard, just to challenge myself I think a little bit.
No,
So,
this one you're not supposed to. This is one you're
good.
not supposed to include it.
Okay, so number
Because we
five
all know that Die Hard
is
is the best.
like oh yeah it was gonna be all well not the fifth Die Hard but it would have been the other four. Okay, so I actually just rewatched this. This would not have been on my list if not for the Couch Potato Philosophy podcast, which my wife and I are doing, and watching through not every Nicolas Cage movie, but a lot of them. And we're watching because basically she realized she had seen nothing but National Treasure from Nicolas Cage, and I said, well, that's we can't do that. So number five is Con Air.
I knew you were going there once you said Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage, yeah. Do you want me to kind of give a blurb about each one of them, or just is it a quick
Whatever you
one?
want. Whatever you want. You do it
Beautiful.
quickly, but whatever you want, however you want to do it.
Totally. Well, this one, I hadn't seen it for years and years and years, and I think I overlooked it. It's a blast. It's so strange. His weird accent that he has throughout that is inconsistent and strange, but as well as all the crazy murderers that he fights. But it is Nicolas Cage against, you know, evil on a plane. So it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Number four is The Raid, which is a Welsh Indonesian film. I don't know if you've seen it. Not as many people as
I've seen both of them.
Have seen it.
I've seen both of them.
I
can't say that I love them, but, you know, I appreciate the way that they do the action.
Yes. And honestly, that's more than quality, maybe overall of the film. I just had to put it on here for the action.
Yeah.
The Raid is a fantastic film. I have not seen The Raid 2. I was living in Indonesia when both of them came out, and for some reason the second one didn't. I missed it. I don't know why. The Rock is number three. So another Nicolas Cage film, and that one is just, man, I forgot how fun The Rock is.
Yeah,
it's a little movie. Bit long. It's got maybe too much buildup. And that, in fact, I was thinking as I rewatched the beginning of Die Hard, the buildup and the setup and the chess pieces that are put together in Die Hard are so well done. And in The Rock, it takes maybe a little bit too long, but the action and the humor and just the crazy Nicolas Cage-ness of it all is a blast. I had a difficult time going between my first and second, and I kind of had to flip a coin. They're also very similar. My second choice is Air Force One, starring Harrison Ford, which I think I might talk myself into it actually being my first one right now, but the Air Force One, you know, the president, who is Harrison Ford, is fighting off terrorists who have taken over his plane. You know, we've got the iconic "get off my plane" line.
Yeah.
It just is a blast. It is so much fun. And it's peak Harrison Ford with that steely look on his face as he's, you know, beating up different people.
Speaking of Gary Oldman. Yeah.
Yeah, please. Yeah. Speaking of Gary Oldman. Exactly. And then number one is Patriot Games, also starring Harrison Ford, and against the best bad guy in movie cinema almost, which is Sean Bean, and one man against these Irish terrorists who are out to take revenge on him for thwarting their attack. And man, you can't get it better than Harrison Ford fighting Sean Bean on a boat. It's the best. So those are my top five Die Hard like movies.
Cool. Great. All right. You want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Tyler Howitt. And I'm on Facebook, but don't find me there because I never go there. It's basically just to post. I'm on Facebook, but yeah, don't really look for me there. I'm also we're still getting set up and stuff like that for our for the Couch Potato Philosophy podcast. So I imagine we will have Instagram and Twitter handles for that, but at the moment we don't. So,
all right, great. And finding me is very simple. All you have to do is do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, or you can go directly to our website. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!